Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim.
Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. I encourage you, if you're new to our podcast, go back and listen to some of our previous episodes. We've had some great guests over the past couple of years. And if you haven't already, please subscribe and let others know about this podcast. And please leave a review. This week, we're happy to have join us J.P. Stevens, who's an associate professor of organizational behavior at the Weatherhead School of Management, Case Western Reserve University. And his research focuses on the experience of work relationships and the coordination that these relationships enable. His work has appeared in the Academy of Management Review, the Journal of Business Ethics, and the Oxford Handbook of Positive Organizational Scholarship. He's contributed to Stories in Fast Company, and he's got some great insights he's going to share that he's learned in his career and his teaching, as well as in his research. Looking forward to today's conversation with JP. Can you give us just a little bit of your background, a little bit of your story?
Gosh, my personal story. Well, I am a native of Trinidad and Tobago, so that's the most southerly set of islands off the coast of Venezuela in the Caribbean. And I came to the U.S. in 2000 to start college at Morgan State University. And then from there, which I don't advise to anyone, went straight from my undergrad to a PhD at the University of Michigan in organizational psychology. And, you know, just really, you know, really formative experiences as certainly as a person, and definitely as an academic, as somebody who cares about research and relationships and academia and education, all that good stuff. So, you know, that was sort of the first portion of my time in the U.S. And now I've been here at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio. It's actually sunny right now in Cleveland, Ohio. I've been here for 13 years. So still, you know, pursuing the work that I care about and trying to make some kind of positive impact as best as I can with that work.
Good. Well, and I know this isn't as long ago for you as it is for me, but so this is more fresher in your mind than than this. But knowing what you know now, what advice would you have given yourself at 22?
Ooh, to go get a job first before grad school. Some of it, you know, it was a little challenging as an international student and visas and all that sort of stuff. So the academic route was just a little easier. But I do think having more life experience, work experience, I think just growing up, just more growing up time, exploring the world time, you know, learning about different types and groups of people and how to interface with them and how to navigate all those things, which I've learned over time. It's just, I think it's really great to have the time for yourself to just mature and grow. And I think particularly in my field, in organizational psychology, organizational behavior, which, you know, are applied kinds of fields, I think having some of that work experience, life experience helps you formulate some sharper questions maybe a little earlier on. I definitely had my own journey of discovery and exploration as a doctoral student, and that continues today. But I would definitely say, yeah, more exploration, maybe even more failure, you know, earlier on, so that, you know, you can manage those sorts of things as you dive into a career.
Yeah, that's good. So thinking about you know, a leader versus a coach, do you think a leader needs to be both?
Oh, that's an interesting question, particularly, you know, here at the Weatherhead School, we pride ourselves on our coaching expertise, both the practice and the research. And so I think definitely being in this climate, the answer is most often yes. I do think that there could be times when those roles could be split, right? Somebody could be a leader in certain ways where they're doing some of the management, which, you know, I accept being a manager and a leader can be two different things. But somebody who can sort of create some order and direction, even inspire, but maybe they're not as capable of directing followers on, you know, very specific growth goals or very specific tasks, which is how I think of a coach, right? Somebody who can help mold you, guide you, have the patience. they may not know everything, but they create that structure for you to develop some sort of meaningful skills, some sort of meaningful life-giving change, right? And I think for a leader to do that well, they'd need to be probably a little more hands-on, right? So you can be very inspiring, but then can you also be sort of in the weeds at certain times to really help grow that person? And that's a tough, you know, a tough ask. But I do think if you can figure that out, then I think you'll have some very happy, very happy people around you.
So we talked a while back, and I think in the conversation we talked about the importance of having a North Star, that self leadership. Talk a little bit about that and the importance of that as a leader.
Yeah. So, you know, that's one of those things that if I go back to the advice to my younger self, that I would definitely have done more. I think I definitely had a what I thought was a North Star. But I think, you know, when you and I talk about it, I'm sure in your own experience, and when I talk about it with my students now, and when I make sense of my own life now, it has a much deeper meaning. It's not, you know, I want this job for this career. So, you know, I may have this, you know, set of opportunities. It is tied to a deep sense of values, which I think you craft over time with experience and sort of having different situations, kind of, you know, seeing how you react to them. Maybe you don't handle them very well, right? So that failure, learning from that failure, learning about your strengths. I do think you need some more life to really flesh out that North Star. And I see that because we try to do that with our sophomores. You know, like, hey, build your sort of purpose statement. And it's tough. It's tough. And I empathize with them. But at least they know that, hey, this is a thing that you can do. So when it comes to North Star, something that I would like to think I'm getting better personally at sort of crafting that, I think it's embedded in what you deeply care about through some sort of process of self-reflection. And then I think it's setting some boundaries, right? To shape, well, how am I actually going to accomplish this? If this is what I say I care about, then how does my life take on the character that would help me accomplish that, right? So how you know, if I'm going to talk the talk, can I walk the walk as well? And I'll say it's kind of tying together, you know, your prior questions. I've definitely benefited from coaching myself. And I think, you know, in the coaching experiences that I've enjoyed, that's where we start. You know, what is it that you deeply care about? And it does require some sifting through, because I get excited about a lot of things, right? But what are those things that are really sustaining and life-giving? that are the core of who you are, who you want to be? And then how does everything else in your life kind of follow from that? Yeah.
So I think a lot of our audience are first-time leaders, maybe first-time CEOs. It could be kind of early in their career. We have others that are listening too that are later in the career. But talk about the importance of connections, high-quality connections. Yeah. And I think sometimes people get so focused on the task or the direction as far as in their career, their heads are down, they're not really making those connections. But talk about the importance of that.
Sure. Gosh, they're so important. You know, I just had some experiences this morning too, where, you know, I'm trying to get some things done here at work, so I'm not able to reach, you know, person X, and, you know, in order to reach them, I need to go through some other people. And it's not about going over other people's heads or anything like that. And of course, being thoughtful and mindful about how you do that. But no, that's just one example where, I mean, in a very transactional way, you can think of the connections as helping you get to a resource. But high quality connections, while all that's very important, you know, in your organization, particularly as you're just getting started, you need to know the different players, get a sense of the organizational landscape, who are the gatekeepers to certain resources. You know, are you aware of that? And, you know, what kinds of relationships are you crafting with those people? But the idea of high quality connections sort of takes it, I think, to another level, where the relationship itself is the resource, right? It's not, I'm not using you to get something that I care about, which is not what we want at all. Because, you know, I wouldn't feel great doing that or being treated like that. So taking the time to build those resources, particularly as a young person, I think is really important. And when we think of high quality connections, you know, I've done some research on that. It's based on, Jane Dutton's work and Emily Heafy's work. And it's the idea that, you know, even in this conversation we're having, Mark, you know, we haven't had a years long friendship, but in this moment, we can both have a sense of, am I learning something? Am I growing? Am I feeling more alive or more energized? Or am I feeling more deflated and I'm ready to go take a nap, right? Like we feel that intrinsically as human beings.
Sure.
When we're in connection with other human beings. And all those things I just listed, am I getting some more information? Are you helping me think about myself in a different way than when we started, you know, 5 minutes ago? Do I now feel inspired, elevated, so that I'm going to go do something else that I maybe hadn't thought of before? And of course, there's physiological benefits too, right? In terms of my blood pressure, in terms of the good reward-based hormones and neurotransmitters, all those things are happening when we're in these very positive moments of connection. And I think you're right. We often, you know, we come to work and we're trying to get things done. I know I've been there. And I think we lose sight of, you know, even taking 5 minutes to chat with somebody on the way to the office can be a great benefit to me and to them, right? Just a brief example, healthcare, which I care about since I'm married to a physician, and I am working on how to improve high quality connections with nurses, given the burnout that caregivers have faced in the pandemic. So I was just in the doctor's office this morning and I was told, you know, I drove 40 minutes and I was told, oh, this is a 10-minute session. I was like, okay. I was like, great. And I could feel myself getting frustrated when I heard that. And I heard my own frustration response. But you know, this person's sitting across from me taking in my info, and I'm like, well, they've probably had multiple sort of 10-minute encounters where they're just, you know, putting things in a computer I'm sure they might be craving some sort of meaningful interaction themselves.
Sure.
And not that I have any superpowers, but it did strike me that, you know what, I can probably drop some of my own frustration. It's not going to change anything about the situation. And we talked about where we were from, and you know, and he was so apologetic as we were waiting on the nurse practitioner to get in. And then I talked with her, and she was so apologetic because she was rushing around from patient to patient. And we talked. I said, yeah, you know, my spouse is a physician, like I understand. You can see the kind of relief in her. She was trying to squeeze some notes in before she could go for lunch. And so even that small exchange, and it really was about 10 minutes, helped me to understand a little bit more about her, about their situation, so I could empathize a little more, which changed my own mood, right?
Yeah.
And then I could go on with a sense that, hey, I got treated pretty well in that short time frame. Maybe I wish they didn't have to talk so quickly to get to the next page. But the fact that we could even exchange and commiserate about the state of healthcare together while I'm receiving some care felt good. You know, I felt cared for, I felt seen, I felt understood. And I would like to think that it was mutual, that they could sense that I was empathizing with their feeling very rushed and wishing they could have a more in-depth examination time. So I think sort of seeking that out in our workday, given the pressures that we're all facing, the tensions between the blurring lines between work and home, right? Post-pandemic life. I think if we can get intentional about, do I have those moments across my day where I can craft a high, you know, that sense of mutual caregiving, feeling seen, where I learn something new, all that sort of stuff, I think could be helpful.
So as we're thinking about, you know, everything that we've experienced in the last few years and having mm-hmm. so many virtual conversations, a lot of times the connection isn't the same as being in person. Right. Can you talk a little bit about kind of that constructive communication that you think, you know, whether it's done via video or in person, talk about just what you found as far as in your study, the importance of.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Yeah. Constructive communication is something I care about. It is an aspect of high quality connections. There's a lot, I think, to be said that I would like to work on more formally. But that is something that we are trying to encourage and intervene with. So I did a pilot study on this a couple of years ago with nurses, like just as the pandemic was sort of easing off. So one thing I'll say is that people are capable of it, which was surprising to me. In a high-stress healthcare environment, we gave nurses this sort of online self-paced learning module. And so one of them did say, you know, can you practice constructive communication where you're sort of sharing and receiving potentially strong emotional information and not be judgmental, be respectful, be aware of maybe I'm burdening this person, like you're sort of gauging their response to what you're sharing, vice versa. And people did it. People tried it, you know, these very busy, very stressed out nurses in our, again, small pilot study. I was actually very pleasantly surprised that they did. And they found, and they gave us some qualitative responses about their experience. And I think they were also somewhat pleasantly surprised that that they understood each other more, they felt appreciated more. It may not have been the norm, but I think trying it, being prompted to try it, made some difference in their stress and resilience. I think for me, it's I want to be sensitive to the challenges that we have in that kind of very mindful, constructive communication. That there's so many factors in our workday, pressures, deadlines, things like that. And I do think, and I use that term mindful very intentionally, because there's some, also some recent research about mindfulness in our interactions and connections. My buddy Chris Rayner and his colleagues recently published a paper on that. So I think some level of practicing intentionality in our dialogues, in our conversations with each other, particularly as we're all facing the same set of stressors within a given organization. So developing that sense of self-awareness that, hey, as I'm communicating, how am I coming off? How might I be making this person feel? Am I doing a good job putting myself in their shoes? And that has to become a sort of practice. So you're not, you know, it's not to say you have to rehearse everything before you go down the hallway and knock on your neighbor's door. But I do think, particularly in these, you know, high stress times, and when we maybe haven't seen each other a lot, right? As some people are working from home one day and some are in the office, you know, I think as the connections get strained and even just fewer in number, how do we sort of cherish them and sort of bring that mindfulness to it? And I'll just add, with virtual conversations, let alone in the classroom, I don't know, this may seem very simple to your listeners, but just checking in, just how are you doing? You know, that, and going from there, right? And giving the space in your meetings, in your classes, it may seem like you're giving up some valuable time for the task, but that, I think, to go through a global pandemic where everybody got touched in some way, and to not acknowledge that folks are going through stuff is just weird to me. You know, so when I came back to teach, because I was on leave actually during the pandemic, and I came back to teach in fall of 21, and I was asking students, I mean, we were all masked up and, you know, it's a strange situation. And, you know, how are you doing? How are your families doing? You don't know if somebody's family member died or not, or sick. Or, and I did have some students come up to me and say, yeah, no one else is asking us that question. You know, so I think whether it's the pandemic or anything else, I think creating that space, maybe particularly at the start of our interactions, at the start of our formal meetings, for folks to really check in. So you know what's being brought into the room so that you can then be more constructive later on, right? And more understanding. And then I think you can understand how to delegate tasks, right? Because this person just has too much on their plate. And you wouldn't know that sometimes if you don't ask. So I think that checking in, working that in more and more to our interactions can be pretty constructive.
Yeah, that's great. Great stuff. So books that you recommend to leaders. I know you write a lot to yourself, but talk about some of your favorites that you think would be helpful for our audience.
Sure. Can I grab something from my book?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
The shameless plug. So this actually came to mind when you asked about constructive. This was developed during the course of the pandemic. And so I have a little profile in here. My mentor and friend, Jane Dutton, has a profile in here. And this was developed by folks at the Stanford Design School.
Okay.
Thinking about, and I just love this idea of, how do you design your meetings? Mm. Right? Again, bringing that intentionality to interactions and encounters at work. How do you, you know, with great intention, shape the experience that people are going to have? And I think the pandemic just threw all of us into that when we realized if I have one more Zoom meeting, I'm going to lose my mind, right? So taking the care to say, hey, we're going to do this, but not this, right? Before you get into the meeting, I think is really important. So they already had a book on meeting rituals, and then they sort of updated it for virtual meetings. You know, how do you cross that, the different affordances, right? And video versus face-to-face and sensing people's tones and, you know, is a screen full of people, like, what do we do? And all these things that everyone's maybe too familiar with these days. So I think that's a really cool, because it's a lot of tactics and strategies. So it's very, very practical. I would give a shout out. I haven't thought of this as a leadership book, but now I think it is. So I'm almost done with Dacher Keltner's book on awe and the science of wonder. And I had the great pleasure of virtually meeting Dacher Keltner. He's at UC Berkeley. He runs the, I think it's the Center for the Science of Greater Good. He's a very well-known social psychologist. He's written some books before. But his book, I think, about how we... what triggers awe, right? The sensation of being connected to something larger than ourselves that has, you know, this accompanying, you feel it in your body. And it can spark some great epiphanies and different ways of thinking that you wouldn't have predicted before you had that awe experience. And, you know, his research, his decades-long research program, illustrates just how universal that sensation of awe is, but also how it's tied to some of the greatest discoveries that we've had in science and society. Of course, think of art, think of music, but also our scholarship and what we know about our planet. So I think that's a really cool book for leaders, because anybody's concerned about the legitimacy of something like awe, you have it there, right? Rigorous research, many countries. If you're concerned about compelling, inspiring stories, they're there in the book. I think what struck me and what I'm going to say here, but don't hold me to it, it's, how could we create organizations that inspire awe, right? So how can you take some of those things that Professor Keltner has outlined, and can we start to shape, and that's the stuff that I think it would be really cool, like how do you orchestrate and structure our organizational experiences so that we can feel more awe in our work? And some of that, so maybe you will feel the chills or not, but some of that I think you could frame it in terms of how do we help connect people to a larger purpose. And which is something I think leaders try to do all the time or say they're trying to do. But what's nice about awe, it's that that's the felt sensation of being tied to something bigger. That's how I know in my body that I, you know, there's more and that I'm part of it, that I'm swept up in it, right? So I think there could be a disconnect in our organizations, right? Where we talk a lot about values, mission, vision, purpose, a lot of retreats and strategic planning, right? We all know this. I mean, it ends up somewhere on a shelf.
Right. Yep.
But how do you actually get people to feel it? I think that's the challenge. And I, you know, maybe have a few ideas that I'm working on my own book. But I do think sort of acknowledging that disconnect. And I think it's such a glorious, you know, maybe I am pie in the sky, but imagine if people did show up awestruck by their work, right? And we know quite a bit about different ways to motivate people, how to connect them to purpose. But what's interesting for me, particularly as a psychologist, it's that in the moment feeling that we have or don't have. Mm. And I'm somebody speaking in a, you know, Frank Gehry designed building, right? That was designed to inspire some sense of awe with people coming in, right? To learn about management. So we put a lot of money into these kinds of things. Right. And there's a lot of energy and effort. You know, what's our strategic vision? What's our purpose statement? But then how do we know that we're actually creating that sensation of awe in the people we care about, particularly with, you know, very low engagement scores that Gallup keeps tracking year on year? Sure. I don't think it's getting any better. And now we have this challenge of splitting, working from home, working in the office. How do you handle hybrid arrangements? So the connectivity is disrupted. The sense of being tied to a particular place and a particular set of people is disrupted. So I think leaders would do well to learn more about, you know, the science of awe and just kind of let's start experimenting with how we can do that for folks.
Yeah. That's a great, I don't think anybody's talked about that topic.
Oh, okay.
Over 200 podcasts. So it's definitely, and we'll be looking forward to your book when it comes out. How would somebody learn more about your work and what you're doing?
What am I up to these days? Is that the big question? So, well, tied to that, you know, my big I have a number of different projects. My big project has been with the Cleveland Clinic and working with the Office of Construction. And it kind of gets at what I just said. How do you create a culture, in this case, on different construction projects, where people feel like part of a team? And, you know, so I've studied two large sites over the past few years. Now there's three sites at the same time. So I'm trying to figure out how to study all of that. But the question sort of remains the same. How do you not just create different structures? So it could be the way the contracts are set up. It could be the way meetings are set up. It could be the reward systems. And you can set all that up, but then how do you sustain it? Especially as projects, they go through these different phases and there's a lot of stress. Projects are facing supply chain and labor pressures after the pandemic that they have not encountered before. And the prevailing industry culture is one of siloing, hyper-competitiveness. We don't trust each other. We don't talk to each other. And these are people on the project. So I'm basically looking at these very, I think, unique projects to understand what makes them unique. You know, there's a lot of effort, time, and money that's going into creating an environment where people can feel like they can dialogue, solve problems, be open and honest with each other, be part of a team. You know, how is that sustained over time and across three very large projects at the same time? So that takes up quite a bit of my focus these days. But it does tie into, I haven't thought of it in terms of awe specifically, but how are you creating that sense of being part of something bigger, particularly in an industry where that's not often the case? It's actually the opposite. And then some other projects like I said, hopefully soon enough, that intervention study of, well, how do we use high quality connections and sort of train people to have better quality connections in healthcare so that they can better, again, having the relationship as a resource to counteract stress and to actually be more resilient. So I'm, you know, working with folks over in our School of Nursing to figure out how to get that back off the ground and you know, develop some tools basically so that people at work can have a better life, essentially, through the relationships, you know, through having stronger relationships in the workplace.
Well, JP, this has been a lot of fun. I appreciate all your thoughts. I know the people listening are enjoying your thoughts and insights, and wish you continued success in all you're doing.
Oh, I appreciate it, Mark. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.